Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, for crying out loud, where is my music? This is the second time this is happening. There is supposed to be some really cool music playing right now. Blog Talk Radio just keeps changing things. The last time the music didn't play, it's because they made upgrades to the site and it bounced my intro music out of the way. So let's just pretend. Tra-la-la-la-la. There's my opening music for this week. Welcome to Shapeshifting. Who the hell is that woman, and why is she singing so badly? I am Lisa Bunnies, author of Shapeshifting, Reclaiming Your Perfect Body, and this show, when I'm not singing, is about shifting the shape of your body and your life into one that is as authentic, incredible, and expansive as your singing voice will allow, using the power of intention and all that good stuff. And I personally lost 50 pounds and overcame big health obstacles while writing the book, and members of my Shapeshifters groups are seeing stunning results as well. I wouldn't say that if it weren't true. I'm even sometimes amazed by the stories they tell me. And today, Lynn McTaggart is supposed to be my guest. She was scheduled to be here on May 7th, and weird things conspired against her appearing, and so today is the rescheduled date, and it would appear that strange things are occurring again today, because Lynn hasn't called in. Now, I'm keeping in mind that she's calling from England. There's a weird time difference. Well, not a weird, there's a huge time difference. I don't know why what's going on is going on. However, I do have a really good friend of mine, Curtis Folt, standing by just in case. Curtis does amazing chakra readings. If you've listened to the show in the past, then you're familiar with who Curtis is and what he does. He also has his own show on Tuesday nights called Arch Messenger, I believe, where he does readings for folks. And Curtis and I will both be in Knoxville, Tennessee, on August 15th through the 17th at the Get Into It Expo. So there's Curtis's intro. In fact, you know what? Let me go ahead and just bring Curtis on, and we'll kill some time and see if Lynn calls. And if she doesn't, it'll just be me and Curtis. How you doing today, Curtis?
Hey, Lisa. I'm rocking, thank you. How are you?
I'm good. I'm confused, but I'm good. I'm not sure what's going on with this whole Lynn thing. I mean, she's a decent person. She's a respected professional. I'm sure that whatever is happening right now is okay.
I'm sure it's something beyond her control.
Yes, absolutely. So
since she did have the grace to get in touch last time, then we could definitely respect the lady. And I'm sorry she's not here. I hope she does get here, because she's got some fascinating perspective to share.
Yeah, she really does. She's doing amazing work. And for those of you who did tune in to listen to Lynn McTaggart, but Curtis and I will have a fun conversation in the meantime. In fact, Curtis and I have been doing a lot of talking about the solstice that's coming up this Saturday. Actually, is it Friday night or Saturday? When is the official solstice?
Saturday night, but I'm not sure what time.
Okay, all right, yeah, that's it. Oh, and I do see Lynn on the other line. Well, that's great. So let's wrap up the solstice conversation here. What are you doing on the solstice?
I will be with a group of friends who are Strix practitioners and other pagans up in the mountains of Cloudcroft, New Mexico. We'll be doing a Thargelia celebration followed by a chakra melding, and I'll let people look up Thargelia. It's much more interesting if you read about it than if I give you a short version, and besides, I don't want to take up Lynn's time.
Oh, well, there you go. Okay. Well, if anyone is interested, this solstice is going to be a big one. Apparently, Pluto is going to be, like, perfectly aligned with the galactic center, and there's all kinds of fun, new-agey folklore behind this one. So look it up and see what you can find. I'm sure there's going to be some interesting things happening this Saturday night. Let me go ahead and intro.
Lisa, let me ask a quick favor.
Yes.
Please don't hang up on me. Just mute me, because I cannot get on the internet or the chat right now, and I don't want to miss this show.
Okay, I will do that. I will go ahead and mute you. And thank you, Curtis, for being here, and I'll talk to you in a few. Thanks.
Great.
Okay. As I was mentioning, Lynn McTaggart is my guest today. She is the author of The Field and The Intention Experiment. She is doing groundbreaking work with her intention experiment. We'll tell you all about it, and I am happy to do everything I can to bring it to the attention of anyone who may not have heard about it yet. Lynn and I have somewhat similar stories. We both have a journalism background, and both devote our lives to learning as much as we can about how science and spirituality intersect. in order to report that information to you. But Lynn, however, has actually teamed up with scientists around the world to do a series of experiments to test the power of our intentions, and you are invited to be a participant, which is what makes it especially cool. Her books are amazing. The Field, The Intention Experiment isn't just a book. It's an experience for all of us. After you read the book, you sign on to her website, theintentionexperiment.com, and you can participate. We'll talk about that in just a few minutes. If you'd like to call in with some questions, the number will be 646-716-8716. You can also hop into the chat room. There's already a few of the regulars there. Hi, guys. How you doing? Before I bring Lynn on, I just want to make a couple quick announcements about upcoming shows. Next week, my guest will be Donna Haynes, who is the author of The Queen of Myself. What she does is she looks into, there seems to be, you know, there's the maiden, mother, the crone. There seems to be, with this new generation of people, sort of a space between mother and crone, and she calls that queen. So we're going to find out what women of my age group are doing these days. And then the following week, July 2nd, I am honored to be featuring an interview with Apollo 14 astronaut and the sixth man on the moon, Dr. Edgar Mitchell. Dr. Mitchell not only has an incredible story, wait till you hear this, about a life-changing shift in consciousness that occurred on that mission to the moon, but he's also the founder of the Institute of Noetic Science. And this is guaranteed to be an incredible once-in-a-lifetime conversation, so mark your calendar now. That is July 2nd. And then for the rest of the July, I'm going to be doing a one-year retrospective featuring the best of shape-shifting shows over the past year. And just so you don't have to try to remember all of that, you can always log on to shapeshiftingonline.com for more information on the radio show, or how to join a shapeshifters group, or to access any of the other helpful tools designed to get to the bottom of what's keeping you from your most incredible expression of self. And actually, I think that's probably enough announcements for now. Without further ado, let's get started. Let me unmute Lynn. There we are. Lynn, are you there?
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good. I'm glad to hear your voice.
We finally connected.
Yes, we have. That's wonderful. I mean, actually, it's just as well, because during the time when we were going to have the original show, I've learned even more about your work, and I'm even more impressed, and so we can have an even more interesting conversation. So.
Oh, well, that's just great, Lisa. Thanks.
Yeah, good stuff. Now, let's pretend that the listeners, that at least one of the listeners here, have no idea who you are and what you do, even though I just gave them the brief synopsis. So if you can give just a quick idea of, you know, about what the field is, and then how you moved into the intention experiment, and then we can move into the real meat of the conversation.
Okay, well, I have a background as an investigative reporter, and I run a newsletter called What Doctors Don't Tell You, which looks at what works and what doesn't work in alternative and conventional medicine, mostly conventional medicine, and what doesn't work. And
right.
I study the medical evidence, and this was some years ago in the mid-90s. I kept coming across very, very good studies of spiritual healing and homeopathy. And I kept thinking to myself, if this is true, that you can just take a thought and send it to someone else and make that person get better, then our understanding of the world is incomplete. And we need to find out if anyone can give us a better paradigm. So because I'm so fact-based, I am a real sort of dog with a bone with information, I thought I should go talk to the scientists to find out. Frontier scientists might be able to explain things like spiritual healing to me. And as I spoke to them, I realized that I was uncovering a new science. It was developing right before my very eyes. And the old science, as we knew it, was crumbling at my feet. And I was just astonished by what they were telling me. But they were all telling me one little piece of the whole. And so I realized after a while that I was going to have to piece this together. Also, scientists speak in a kind of code, which is math. And so I also realized I was going to have to translate this into normal English. So that work became the field. And the field is basically an energy field, a quantum energy field that unites us all like an invisible web. And scientists have known about this for many years, since the development and discovery of quantum physics, but they've always subtracted this out as being insignificant. But we now understand that this energy is just unfathomably large, and it's caused by the the energy passing back and forth between quantum particles. So in a sense, it's the teeming energy in empty space. And we know that there's a real implication here. It demonstrates, first of all, that we're all connected, and also that we have access to information at the very furthest cosmos, because if we're all connected by quantum waves, quantum waves go on to infinity. So it provides us with a wonderful structure to understand how all of those so-called extrasensory abilities that humans have are possible. So when I finished with the field, I still had a lot of questions, and mostly this unfinished business had to do with thinking about the whole idea that consciousness can affect matter. I kept thinking to myself, you know, how far can we go here? Can we, you know, can I make my children fly with my thoughts, or, you know, stop a train with my thoughts, or most importantly, do anything to alleviate the suffering on the planet with my thoughts? And so that curiosity sparked the intention experiment.
And, wow, those are the questions that, I mean, as silly as it sounds, can you make something fly? Those are the questions that you actually, okay, how far can we take this stuff? And it's amazing the things that you're finding in the intention experiment. In fact, I love the way that what you were talking about earlier is that there were all these little bits and pieces that seemingly this is an insignificant part, but when you bring them all together, you're seeing that you're getting a zeitgeist kind of a thing where all of it's coming, or a gestalt, that's actually the word I was looking for. It's all coming together into one big whole picture. And that's just...
Well, yeah, that's absolutely right, Lisa. And, you know, that was the really interesting thing about it. Everybody was looking at some aspect of the same thing. And the same thing with intention. I found that actually there's an enormous body of evidence about the power of thoughts to change the world. And a lot of science to demonstrate that it's not so far-fetched. But the way I've been testing it, aside from gathering together all of this material, I've also been testing it through an ongoing experiment. One of the things that was really interesting to me was the whole idea of the collective and group intention, and whether or not lots of people thinking the same thought at the same time will magnify the effect. So I was looking into a lot of the data, and it was interesting but not conclusive. So my husband turned to me one night and said, "Look, why don't you do these experiments yourself?" And it sounded like a preposterous idea because, you know, I'm not a scientist. And
right.
The last experiment I remember was 10th grade biology class. And it was me who did the frog because my,
right.
You know, my lab partner was a guy and he fainted. So it was left to me. So, but as I thought about it, I started thinking, well, you know, I have loads and loads of readers around the world. The field is in 20 languages. And I have lots of scientists I know. So if I used my internet site as the hub, I could gather together many thousands of people, hundreds of thousands of people potentially, and have them every so often come together and send an intention to certain target sites. And
right.
If we did this, we'd have the largest global laboratory in the world. And so that's what we've been doing over the past year and a half. And we've had, you know, starting from the ground floor, very, very, very tiny little experiments, it's grown into something very, very big.
And you are actually seeing results.
All but one of our 13 experiments have provided us with significant results. And the 13th, I'll explain in a moment, had interesting changes. And we know that something happened. Our equipment just wasn't sensitive enough to record exactly what that was. And we're going to try it again with better equipment.
Right, and if I recall, the one that didn't seem to work, actually, it's like, who was it? I think Edison said that he tried so many, he kept trying different things until he ran out of ways to do it wrong, you know, to invent the light bulb.
Exactly.
It's almost like that's what you're doing here is, even though this one may not have given you the results you were looking for, it taught you something else that's just as important.
Well, I think that's what you have to be available to do in science. You have to be ready to ask questions and maybe get answers you didn't expect. And some of the answers will prove your hypothesis, and others will demonstrate your hypothesis is wrong, and some will demonstrate that the thing you thought could work doesn't work, but others will just be showing that you're asking the wrong question. Now, when we started with just a very simple target, a leaf, and actually two leaves, because we always have a control. And I asked a group of 400 people at a conference of mine to send an intention to one of these two leaves, we had webcam images of them, and they were at the University of Arizona. This experiment was being run by the noted psychologist, Dr. Gary Schwartz, and his team at Tucson, Arizona. So here we were in London, England, so we were thousands of miles away. And we sent an intention to increase the little light emissions that come from this leaf. All living things emit a tiny current of light called biophoton emissions. And our intention, our instruction was to try to make the leaf glow and glow. So that's what people held an intention for 10 minutes. Now, the scientists didn't know which leaves we were sending intention to. And so we sent them to one, and the scientists after that put them in special equipment that can photograph this light, highly sensitive CCD cameras, which both photographs and counts the light. And after the event, after we unblinded the study and told the scientists once they'd finished their pictures and information gathering, we discovered that our intention had a really significant effect. And the images themselves, the photographs, demonstrate that the leaf we sent intention to is truly glowing in these pictures, and the leaf not sent intention is dark. So that was our first remarkable result. And we then brought that over the internet, and we did it with some seeds, and we got a very, we got an interesting result too, an indefinite result. So we moved on to then a real target, which was trying to see if we could make plants grow faster. So I was speaking all over the world last year, from everywhere from Australia to America. And so every time I had a conference, I would run an intention experiment. And so the first one we ran with the seeds was in Sydney, Australia, once again working with Gary Schwartz and his Tucson group. And we sent intention to one of four sets of seeds to grow a certain amount by a certain number of days, and it's basically to grow faster than normal. And we sent intention to that one set of seeds. Again, the scientists didn't know which of the four we'd chosen. So after we gave them their intention, after we finished the intention, they took all four sets of seeds and planted them and then calculated the growth after the fifth day. And lo and behold, every single time we ran it, the seed sent intention grew significantly higher than the controls. And we're talking about 8 millimeters higher, so really much higher in terms of, in scientific terms. So it was remarkable, and the seed sent intention by one group, which was at one time I was speaking before a group of healing practitioners, healing touch practitioners. So these were really experienced intenders. The seeds were actually twice as high.
Wow.
So grew twice as high as the controls. So that was really, this is a really robust demonstration. Not only did we run an actual experiment with three controls, we also run a control experiment after each one where we have four sets of seeds and none of them are sent intention and they're all planted. And then we run that to see how they grow in relation to our other four sets. So this is a really robust scientific study with great results. Undeniable results pooled together. They're very, very strong. And actually, Dr. Schwartz is presenting our data at the Society for Scientific Exploration meeting in June. So we're on our way to be publishing this study. So it's been pretty impressive.
And it's such exciting stuff because a lot of us, we know that this works, but, prove it. Do you know what I mean? So it's I really appreciate that there are people like you and your group of scientists and, of course, all the people who are participating in the experience that are willing to, step up and, okay, here is the proof. This really does work. Because then when you're trying to explain to somebody how that Reiki works or any of the other type of intention work that we do, here's scientific proof that this. Although one of the interesting things that I found in your book is that prayer can actually work to somebody's detriment because the intention isn't necessarily what you would hope prayer would be. I wonder if you can go into that a little bit. I thought that was just fascinating.
Well, yeah, I think that intention is something that comes from the heart. And many people, just as many people in real life, say one thing and mean another. So the real meaning of it shines through with intention. For instance, I think the study you're talking about had to do with some alcoholics, and they were prayed for by their relatives. And some scientists decided to judge whether or not prayer worked by dividing the group and having some prayed for and some not prayed for. And to their horror, they found the people who were prayed for actually did worse than the others and had a greater degree of relapse into alcoholism. So the way they concluded it was just this. They wondered whether or not the prayers were really heartfelt, because many people living with an alcoholic might have many unconscious desires for that person to die. You know, it's pretty tough thing living with an alcoholic. Or they might not really want the person to stop drinking, because they might be also a drinker themselves and not want to lose one of their drinking buddies. So there's all those kinds of mixed and tainted emotions going on. So one of the things that's really important with intention, and there are many techniques, by the way, with intention, it's a learned skill. Everybody can learn how to do. But one of the most important techniques is sending it from your heart, and that means meaning what you say.
Right. And also, I think when it comes to prayer, if you're going to work with prayer, you shouldn't, like if you're praying for world peace, you don't pray, oh, please stop the war, oh, please make people be nice. You don't focus on what you desperately want. You focus on, I intend that the world is peaceful. I intend that my life is peaceful and that I ripple it outwards into the world. So it's the same words, but it's a completely different feeling behind it.
Yes, exactly, exactly. And I think this is a very good point, which is that it being very specific is important. As I say, one of the things I wanted to find out is how do you become a good intender? So I thought, I'm going to go interview masters of intention, because these are people who can really use intention to incredible effect. You know, these are like Qigong masters or master healers or Buddhist monks who can change their temperature by 20 degrees or heal somebody remotely or, you know, knock back somebody just with their thoughts. That's what a Qigong master does.
Right.
And I found a lot of commonalities among all of these people. They might use slightly different technique, but basically it boils down to a similar type of idea. So I tried to distill from their techniques some common, simple techniques all of us could use. And I called this program Powering Up, because I felt that the evidence showed, for instance, with Buddhist monks, that when they're sending a very focused intention, their brains aren't slowing down. They may start in a meditative state, but they end up speeding up to a speed much faster than ordinary waking consciousness. It's like they're attending with every bone of their body. And so that was why I felt that it's important to demonstrate and find out how to do a very highly focused mind state, a highly focused state with all of your senses, but something where you're really attending with every pore of your body. That kind of, you know, it's, in a sense, it's like entering hyperspace.
Yeah, and that's where the coherence comes in.
Yes, and I think that's, yes, exactly. Exactly.
Right.
Getting into a very focused mind state, you start with meditation, but I suggest people do a lot of mindfulness meditation, which is attending to the present moment without judgment, without thought, with just your five senses. So you're just experiencing the present moment in a multisensorial way. So, for instance, if you're eating your cornflakes, you're smelling it, you're tasting it, you're engaging in the feel of it going down your throat. You're just focusing on that with exquisite attention and not thinking about what you're about to do that day or what happened yesterday. And doing that is a helpful practice in how to get into this highly focused mind state. So I ask people to practice that a lot. And then another important element is being highly specific about what you want. most people aren't very specific. For instance, most people will send a message about wanting lots of money, but they don't really indicate, it's probably not that they want money. What they want is a different job, more freedom, more time to spend with their kids, more time to go on holiday, anything more than what they have or different from what they have, but not necessarily having to do with a lot of money and all of that and all of what that entails. So people have to be really, really specific. Last spring, I did what most women do, almost every woman on the planet does, which is I said to myself, I'd like to lose 5 pounds. And before I knew it, almost immediately, I got a terrible stomach bug. And I was absolutely ill for 2 weeks, and I lost 5 pounds and more. And I just thought to myself, oh, my goodness, I sent the universe a message, but I forgot to specify how I wanted to lose this weight. So, you know, that's my example of the wrong kind of intention to do. You need to know, you need to really tell the universe what you want.
Right. Include happy and healthy and harming none and all that good stuff.
All that good stuff. Exactly. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, when you're talking about eating your cornflakes, that reminds me, one of my favorite passages from the book, The Miracle of Mindfulness by Thich Nhat Hanh, where he's talking about doing the dishes. You, when you're washing the dishes, as much as you may not wish to be washing the dishes, the only way to truly wash the dishes is to actually be there and notice your hands moving through the water and the dishes becoming clean and make this a meditation in and of itself. Because if you can't enjoy washing the dishes, all you're thinking about is the cup of tea that you're going to have when you're done. How are you going to enjoy your cup of tea? Because once you're drinking your cup of tea, you're going to be thinking about the gardening that you're going to be doing in a half hour.
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
Absolutely. Perfect.
Yeah. Yeah, wonderful stuff. In fact, you have, I subscribed to your email list. You have a Living with Intention CD set that just sounds mind-blowing. I haven't had a chance to order it yet because, like I said, I just saw it recently. But you're saying in there, in the intro to this, you say that it's not about happy thoughts or wishing millions of dollars into your wallet, that there is actually more to it than that. And how would you expand on that a little bit, about it not just being about happy thoughts?
Well, thank you, Lisa. Well, there's a lot of different ideas there, and I think they're all really important. And they're ideas, actually, that I've been exploring this year with our Living with Intention workshops. We're running workshops all around America, and we're going to be in Los Angeles in July, on July 13th to 11th to 13th. And we're going to be in Portland, we're going to be in Boston, and other places in Europe. And what we've been exploring there is, first of all, showing people that, because people think about manifestation as just being happy thoughts, you know, if I just think positively, it'll come to pass. And one of our main messages in our workshops and what we teach is that you're a leaky bucket. You are sending out intentions every moment. You know, I used to think that intention was the big ask. You know, when the house is on fire, when the husband's left you, when the kids have run away from home, when your bank balance is zero, you know, you get down on your knees and you start making the big ask, you know, please change this in any way that you do. But actually, intention is going on at any moment. You know, you are sending out your thoughts at every moment. And it's not just the big ask that goes outside of you. You know, we're beaming out instructions to the universe at every moment. And the universe is picking that up. So your unconscious thoughts, your judgments of everyone else, your negativity, all of the muck and mendacity in your life, in your head, is leaking out to the world all the time. And the world is picking that up as your life's intention. So one of the things we work on is making a coherent mission statement of yourself in every way, that your every comment you, every thought you hold, in a sense, is contributing to this mission statement. Your work, the thing you do, a lot of people attempt to be very altruistic, but they do something that harms the world, you know, and that's their daily bread. So looking at that and trying to make a coherent overall mission statement. But the other thing about not doing for yourself, I mean, we've been finding in these workshops and also on our website, we have a thing called Intention of the Week, and it's been it started with a Vietnam vet named Don, who suggested that he become an intention of one of our intended targets because he has ankylosing spondylitis, which means his spine basically is frozen and he can't move. And he felt that he would be a perfect target because he has so much medical stuff about him that you could track any changes. So the readers on their own began sending him intention a couple of times a week, and I suggested he keep a diary. And he wrote me a few months later to say, my pain is way down. And he wrote me a few months after that to say, my pain is gone. And actually, I'm moved. And so I was just astonished by this. And I looked into it further with some other people. And I found as months went on, the groups on our website were beginning to send intention to, and I'm talking about small groups, 10, 20 people, were sending intention to each other. There was a guy called Daniel who was in a terrible gas explosion, and his hands were terribly burned. And he was, his wife got on the website to her little group and said, can you send intention to Daniel? And we were astonished to hear that Daniel, who was supposed to have skin grafts and be in the hospital for months, got out in 6 days. And so this pattern, I know we were just astonished by this. And this has started to repeat itself over and over again when we run a workshop. We suggest people formulate in small groups, and we have them sending intention to each other in particular ways, and we send intention to the people who are health challenged, and then we find out what happens to them next day. And we're getting these amazing reports of people who had all this pain. Someone comes in and their leg feels better than it was for 12 years, or somebody with constant headaches, their headaches for the first time are gone, and on and on and on. And so it's a very interesting phenomenon we're seeing here, which is it's seemingly the intention, and the other interesting aspect of this actually is this sender also gets better. So what we're starting to see is that in the process of giving, you also receive. So our message is really different from the kind of get rich quick. I create my wealth type of idea. Our message is about using intention to heal the world and heal yourself and heal others. And through healing others, you heal yourself.
Right. And, that's something that, again, New Agers already, know because they've seen their own personal experience. But it's so wonderful to see somebody proving this scientifically in a way that I can go to my family members who think this stuff is all just a bunch of, BS and say, look, there's science.
this is exactly.
This is real. And
exactly.
I'm fascinated by another thing in your book, retro intention. I do have personal experience with this, and I would love it if you would talk about this and explain what this means to people, because it really does happen. It does work.
Well, this is so interesting. There was a doctor called Leonard Lebovici, and he, an Israeli doctor, who wanted to disprove alternative medicine. So he decided to think up the most outrageous study he could. And this study had to do with prayer. He had a bunch of very serious patients who had a thing called blood sepsis. It's a blood infection. And he thought, well, let's send a prayer intention to half the group. So they did. They sent a prayer intention to half the group, and the other half were not given anything. So then he calculated it, and he controlled it very well, and he calculated afterward, and he found the people sent intention got better in every way. They left the hospital sooner, they had fewer complications, et cetera, et cetera. Now, there was an interesting coda to this study, and it has to do with its study design. The patients were in the hospital between the years 1992 to 94. The study was actually carried out in the year 2000, 6 to 8 years later. So So what Levovici had done was he'd gathered together hospital records of people who had already left the hospital, divided them up randomly, sent intention to the one group, and found, that, to his horror in a sense, that they were better in every way. So he thought this demonstrates that you can't use the scientific method to look at alternative medicine. But the way it was universally interpreted was that we can go back and change the past. Now, many, many scientists and physicists have been playing around with this in very, very interesting and well-controlled studies. And they have found, even with using things called random event generators, which are like electronic tosses of the coin, they found that that these kinds of machines are, say, computer screens with randomly alternating images. Let's say they're showing cowboys and Indians. Normally, if left to its own device, the machine will show half cowboys and half Indians. About 50% of the time cowboys, 50% of the time Indians. But Levovici found, that people after Levovici have found that when they do this kind of study, they can, if they sit somebody in front of the computer and say, think more cowboys than Indians, they'll get more cowboys than Indians, a small but significant percentage of the time. So what some scientists have tried to do is to see if you can send that intention backward in time. So in other words, run the machine already, and then 3 days later have someone send an intention to it to have more cowboys than Indians. And they find that when they go back and track the data on that machine, that you get more cowboys than Indians. And if you run it again the same way but don't have an intention sent to it retroactively, that you don't have such an effect. So this is quite remarkable. And there have been all kinds of studies. They've tried to retroactively affect foot traffic in a grocery store, in a supermarket, and car traffic in a tunnel. They've tried other things where they're even trying to affect their own breathing rates retroactively. And the studies are very robust. They're very interesting. They show that it works. So if people like Dean Radin, a scientist who used to be at the Institute of Noetic Sciences, have done kind of mathematical modeling of this with REG machines, with random event generators. And they've found that actually the math supports the idea that the information is flowing backward. In other words, from the effect, the final effect, to the person originating it. And this suggests, and the other studies, psychological studies, suggest that our future seems to be affecting our present all the time. In other words, the future is contingent, in a sense, on the present is contingent on future conditions. That's very mind-boggling, but I like to just say it this way. Our future and our present are shaking hands all the time.
That's a great way to put it. That makes it so much easier to understand that they are absolutely connected and they're communicating. You know, as you were talking, though, about the Cowboys and Indians study, I recall one of the coolest things in your book was that they noticed that women were getting different results. I believe it was that when women are focused on making the changes, they were not having as good a result as if they were intending while they were multitasking.
Yes. I mean, that I thought that was a very interesting thing. It seemed that women who were focused would not get the results, but women who were, answering the phone and holding the baby and concentrating on something else would have a higher result. Men, on the other hand, had their best result when they were absolutely directed, absolutely focused. And I found that very interesting, and I talked with the scientist about it, Brenda Dunn, herself a woman, and she was laughing about it and saying, doesn't this mirror what women actually do? And they usually are very focused when they're doing four things at once. And I certainly, as a working mom, I could relate to that.
Sure, absolutely. It's almost like because all of the channels of your brain are taken up with other things, there's no room for doubt to creep in.
Yeah, exactly. And so you just kind of focus on it. And it was very interesting, too, that men had a very directed effect, but women had a more profound effect on a target. And women would oftentimes, when they were focusing on cowboys, they would get Indians, but they would profoundly change the computer. So, you know, if profoundly in the wrong direction, but that's still considered a hit in science. It means you're deviating from chance.
Sure,
so what they found, something's happening, right? Something's being affected. But what is very interesting, I think, is the combination of men and women. If there's a bonded couple, they have something like four times the effect on the machine. So it's very directed, but it's also very profound. So that combination effect.
Well, you know, this just occurred to me, and I have no idea if there's anything behind this, but I wonder if you're using cowboys and Indians, if women aren't maybe getting more Indians because they have more empathy for the Native American plight, and cowboys are John Wayne and, you know, just kind of macho. Who knows? Maybe that has...
I think you're absolutely right. I think you're absolutely right, Lisa, in that it's an emotional, sometimes emotional engagement with the target. I mean, they were playing around with that a great deal with some of the studies and looking at whether or not certain kinds of images on the computer screen affected people more than others. And they found that was true, that images that were archetypal would tend to make people react in the best way. What was also interesting is that it didn't feedback, giving people an idea of how they did, didn't help in any way. It actually hindered it. So a lot of what was going on was just purely unconscious. It was just happening on a different level. And I think that's really interesting, is that this is a different mind channel basically working on this.
Huh. Wow, this is just such amazing stuff. I know another thing in the book, too, is you're talking about the gremlin effect. And I know I've got two members of my family who, just real briefly, gremlin effect is somebody who, like, blows up electrical equipment, you know, computers don't work or that type of thing. My son-in-law, who is an epileptic, he has a powerful effect on appliances and other type of electrically moving machines. When his meds are off, when he's in danger of having a seizure, that's kind of how my daughter knows, okay, your meds are off because, you know, the machines are turning themselves off. And their son, one night he was spending the night at his grandmother's house, and at 3 o'clock in the morning, my daughter and her husband were awakened because his favorite toy had started banging and clattering. It was, you know, one of those Transformer kind of boy toys that makes a lot of noise. And his favorite toy was going off 3 o'clock in the morning, and they found out the next day that at 3 a.m. he woke up at grandma's house crying because he wanted to go home.
Is that right? Interesting. Really interesting. Yeah. Well, there's a lot of interesting extrasensory material and information that we're privy to all the time. And what I think is most interesting, I've done a lot of work on this about psychic knot between mother and child and how mothers pick up a lot of information, or pets pick up information, mostly when it is at a time of need. And so there is a lot of information that we are picking up from other channels all the time. And that's one of the other things that we look at, and one of the things that I work on in training people in our workshops is becoming not only a better sender, but also a better receiver of information. You know, opening the channels both ways.
How do you do that? If you could just quickly explain.
Well, we practice back and forth. I mean, one of the things that we do that's really interesting is we play around with sending intentions into water and letting some of the other recipients try to intuit it. And what was the intention sent? And people are amazed to see how much they actually pick up, you know, and
wow,
how much information they're getting all the time. We also have them send and receive information to each other. And once again, what's really interesting is to watch the open channel between a mother and child. You know, if we have a mother and daughter coming to a workshop, they almost always get the information they're sending each other. But most people, even without practice, are finding they pick up that material. But in terms of picking it up, it's a whole process. I mean, we teach people about picking up information in pieces and becoming, you know, picking up with hyperspecificity, learning how to use your senses much more, learning how to turn off the cognitive brain. There's a great deal of practice that we work on. And in terms of intention, I talked about focused mind, but another way is also opening the heart compassion area so that you're sending it out through your heart. You're not sending it out through your head. And, you know, it's that's where you pick up, that's where you receive first, too. So we do that. There's other things also about, as I say, being highly specific. I mean, we found with our intention experiments that you can, you know, we had one result when we just said we'd like to make the plants have an enhanced growth. But we got a much bigger effect when we said we'd like them to grow at least 3 inches by the fourth day. And so that kind of intention, doing that kind of intention really has the most profound effect, where you're being very, very specific. And there's other things about times and places, et cetera, we work on too.
Okay.
But we all have it here. We all have this ability. It's about just learning technique and, in a sense, relearning how to listen.
Now, as far as being specific, I've heard two different schools of thought. One is that, yes, you do have to be specific if you are going to manifest or intend or whatever wording you want to use. And then on the other hand, I've heard that if you are too specific, sometimes you can block what is actually the desired result. Do you know what I mean?
You mean you have an unconscious desired result,
you're narrowing it too close. Like, say that you're intending that your example earlier, you're intending that you have money, that you have this much money, blah, 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 but what you really want to get out of that money is the freedom or the ability to buy this car or whatever it is. So by focusing your intent so specifically on something that you didn't really want, you don't get either.
Well, I guess my answer to that is to work out what you really want and then send that specific intention. At least with our intention experiments, and remember, there's a lot of lore surrounding this, and that's what we want to try to strip away and say, well, this is what we found in studies, and maybe we can extrapolate from that. But I found in all of the science that I've looked at that being specific really is important. And there's only one area where it is a possible difference with that, and that is when you're trying to kill an unwanted cell. For instance, a lot of people use negative intention with, say, cancer or bacteria or whatever, and they try to kill the cancer by imagining it dying and sending intentions to kill it. And some of the good healers would say they would prefer to do something like being specific, but also talking about returning to full health in every way. And so not sending a negative intention to anything, even cancer, but just say free of, you know, to have those cells be returned to health and be healthy and well in every way.
Right.
And
okay.
So that would be about the closest I get to saying don't be quite so specific, because everything else suggests that you should be. I'll give you an example of unwanted negative intention from not being specific. I don't know if she went home and sent intention every night, but Heather Mills McCartney, the former wife of Beatle Paul McCartney,
right.
really, from all the stories about her in her early life, she really wanted fame, really wanted fame. And she, you know, ended up marrying a Beatle, and she got fame all right. She is now probably one of the most infamous women in Britain, because once they started once they separated, they started digging up so much stuff on her and found out about pornographic pictures and possible role in prostitution and this and that and the other thing. And she's been so thoroughly discredited that she's got a kind of infamy. She's on every cover everywhere on OK Magazine, or at least she was for a while, but all for all the wrong reasons. So there's a perfect example of not being specific, you know?
Yeah, right. Be careful what you wish for, basically.
Exactly, exactly, exactly. So I think, you know, you have to think it through. What do I really want here?
Yeah, yeah. Well, one of the people in the chat room here is saying, in intending losing weight, I find that I'm gaining. And as far as I'm concerned, when you intend that you lose weight and you find that you're gaining, in my perspective, is that your body is saying, okay, you want to lose some weight, here is your big clue. Look at this as your clue. Instead of hating yourself for gaining the weight, look at this
yes.
as a gift to find out, what am I trying to tell you? Because your body works in symbolism.
Yes, I think that's a really interesting point, Lisa. I think that's right. If you're trying to lose weight, also take it in baby steps. You know, sometimes people make impossible goals for themselves in any regard, including losing weight. And sometimes just, you know, making an intention, a specific intention for that week, and also, turning it into a positive thing instead of losing weight, maybe turning it into, you know, there's a lot of lore about using, framing everything in a positive way and saying that, you know, I want to be, this particular size in 2 weeks' time, you know, and just say that rather than I want to lose 5 pounds or something. That's, again, kind of a negative. And a lot of people would say you're focusing on the negative, what I want to get rid of kind of thing,
right.
Not what I want. So
right,
that's one other suggestion. Yeah.
Well, we've just got a few minutes. Oh, boy, this went so fast. I want to make sure that before we go. Yeah, geez, it just started. I want you to tell us about the mini Gaia experiment, because that one is just fascinating to me.
Okay, well, let me tell you what's on the card, Lisa. We have two really interesting stories. Well, our upcoming experiment, which we're going to be doing in July, is we're sending intention to water, not the seeds. We've been doing some water experiments, and then our intention for growing plants and making them more healthy, we're sending into the water, and then planting, watering the seeds with the water, with that water. So we'll see if that works. But then we've got some really ambitious things. We've got what's turning into a live aid of intention experiments this autumn on September 14th. We're gathering groups around the world, and there are many groups who have said they want to participate. The Alliance for New Humanity and Unity Church and many other groups who are going to be involved in a peace intention experiment where we send intention to a number of hotspots around the world to try to lower violence, and we'll measure the effect before and afterward. Our mini Gaia, Dr. Schwartz and I are creating like a little mini spherical terrarium, like a little mini world where we have primitive plants and animals. And we're going to send intention to see if we can lower things like the CO2 levels now, and lowering the temperature. So that will have enormous, enormous implications on our ability to heal the planet. And then we're also playing around with sending intention to water, where we mutate bacteria from bad bacteria to good bacteria. So those are some of the experiments. So we've got a lot going on, so we really do invite people to take part in any of those experiments by coming onto our website, theintentionexperiment.com, and signing up for them.
Okay.
And anyone can participate.
Okay, so this isn't just for people who've read the book, because I know some of the experiments you have to have read the book, because you have to sign in and give like a quote from a certain page, that type of thing.
Yes, thank you, Lisa. We started out doing that because we wanted to have really experienced intenders. Now what we decided to do is let it open to everyone, but ask people to sign. They have to sign up so we can send them instructions about how to practice and how to learn how to meditate, et cetera, et cetera. And, of course, if they want to buy the book, they can do that too. But I won't stop them. But all they need to do is sign up, and then we give them instructions and get them, and then they also get updates as to what's happening in the experiment. So it's open to everyone. We've had participants from 80 countries around the world and thousands of people coming on periodically on our website. So,
wow.
You know, we do invite everyone. And I really love to tell people my other website too for our workshops, if I could.
Sure.
That is, if that's all right, with the websites we're running in America, it's all on www.theintentionworkshops.com. So we invite you to come, and I hope to see some of you there at them this summer.
Okay, well, I will add that to shapeshiftingonline.com. It's the intention workshops, plural,
yes.
.com?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, it is.
OK, Okay, great. And we about 5 minutes left. I wonder, one of my favorite questions is to ask my guest, how has your work actually changed your personal life? How do you use this in your own world?
Goodness. Well, in every possible way, it has completely changed the messenger, I would say. First of all, it's changed my focus for my work. I mean, I was a hard-boiled, journalist, hello, sweetheart, get me rewrite type of person when I started. And I had no sense of getting involved in a spiritual realm. I was, very science-oriented, very much looking at the science, et cetera. And when I did read the science, like many scientists, it can't help but change you because you understand that this kind of science has an enormous spirituality, enormous implication. I guess what has changed is my life's work, because after finishing the field and the intention experiment, what I'm interested in, I've recognized that one of our terrible problems in our world really stem from this whole idea of feeling separate, which is an outgrowth of the scientific story we've been told. So my life's work now is about providing people with tools for remaking the world, and remaking the world according to this new image, this image of a connected world, and a world where we are all affecting each other, and where we have these powers, and we understand and realize our full human potential.
Right. And that's actually basically what the field is. The field is how we are connected. It's explained in beautiful, easy to understand language that we really are truly connected. This isn't just poetry. This is real stuff.
Well, it is real stuff, and it's stuff that's been proved. It's now the stuff of science. And the intention experiment, I hope, will prove that our thoughts have enormous power to heal the world, and that we can do this as a collective. And I think that's the other thing that I've been impressed by, humbled by, shocked by, is the power of these tiny groups to heal people, and the power that this small collective has. It has some sort of a, we all exist only and totally in relationship. Now we know this from the science. And we're finding that one of the biggest stresses is not having lots of work. It's isolation. And so making this connection with a small group is like returning home. And I think that's what gives this little power of this group so much ability to heal. And that's what we're experimenting with now.
Wow. This work just leaves me speechless. I am so thankful for you and for the people that you work with. In fact, if anybody who's interested, go to Lynn's website, theintentionexperiment.com. You've got podcasts with interviews from these cutting-edge scientists where these things are all explained. There's no charge for any of this. Your site is so full of resources that you could spend weeks just poking around in there finding all of this stuff.
Well, thank you very much. I mean, what's really interesting is it's its own little social network, and the groups that are developing are all working on helping to create these tools. And I think that's what's exciting for me, is to watch it all unfold, and then just watch what's happening not only in the science but with our little intentions of the week too. We have, we have an intention of the week. Every week we nominate somebody with a health challenge, and everybody sends intention to them at, it's 6 o'clock p.m. my time, so probably that's 1 p.m. East Coast Daylight Saving Time. And every Saturday, people all over the world send intention to this person, and we keep getting reports of all sorts of things happening. So it's quite, as I say, it's pretty humbling for us too.
Yeah. Wonderful work. Wonderful. And thank you so much for being here. I'm glad we finally connected. Once again, Lynn McTaggart, author of The Intention Experiment. Her webpage is theintentionexperiment.com. Once again, folks, listen next week. Donna Haynes, the queen of myself, and then July 2nd, Edgar Mitchell, Apollo 14 astronaut, walked on the moon, one of 12 people in the history of history to do that. So be there. I can't wait to talk to him. And I will see you folks next week. Lynn, thank you once again. Thank you, everybody in the chat room. And I will see you all next week.
Thanks so much, Lisa.
All right. Thank you. Bye.